begin. Okay. Well, in the early hours of the morning of the 26th October 1917, the forces of the Military Revolutionary Committee stormed the Winter Palace, the old home of the Tsars in Petrograd, and arrested the members of the Provisional Government. And the following morning, Lenin rose to an outstanding ovation of the delegates assembled for the Second Congress of the Russian Soviets and announced, "We will now proceed to construct the socialist order." And he then read a long proclamation offering an immediate peace to end the butchery of the First World War. This moment was a dramatic fulfilment of almost 30 years of revolutionary activity on Lenin's part. And as Leon Trotsky argued, it is difficult to imagine that the Russian Revolution would have been successful without Lenin there. But if it is accurate to see that Lenin's role was in many ways decisive in the revolution, it remains the case that the tremendous revolutionary upheaval that took place was not made by just a few individuals, but by the combined forces and the efforts of millions of workers. But to be successful, that tremendous creativity and enthusiasm and activity of millions of workers had to be organised, cohered and galvanised and given a coherent political direction. And Lenin's greatest achievement then was his ability to mould such a fighting force, the Bolshevik Party, to lead the working class to victory. Now, Lenin is presented in standard works, particularly by academic writers, as being, you know, politically a pragmatist, you know, simply concerned for power, above all, you know, concentrated on tactics over theory. A typical writer in this ilk is Edmund Wilson, who put it this way. The theoretical side of Lenin is, in a sense, not serious. It is the instinct for dealing with the reality of the definitive political situation that attains in him the high point of genius. He sees and he adopts his tactic with no regard for the theoretical positions of others or for his own theoretical position in the past. Then he supports it with Marx's text. Now, what I want to argue is that this conventional academic and bourgeois account of Lenin's political approach, that he was, you know, a Jacobin, authoritarian, a power-seeking politician and so on, above all concerned with media tactics of getting advantage, is at totally odds with the real Lenin, who based his whole political outlook on a very theorised understanding of the tasks of confronting the socialist movement and how working class could come to power. And that his tactics and strategy and so on flow from his theoretical analysis of the world. And up until 1914 and the outbreak of the First World War, Lenin's whole approach was based upon the theoretical work he'd done in the late 1890s and then into the 1890s, which reached its, you know, most developed form and written down and cohered in his, you know, great book, The Development of Capitalism in Russia, which was published in 1899. And that was in the early stages, which was the basis for the whole outlook of what was to become eventually the Bolshevik Party. And then, after the outbreak of the First World War, the capitulation of the Second International to imperialism and so on, then followed a whole reassessment of Lenin, of the whole socialist tradition, and a theoretical reorientation that took place on that. He went back to read pretty much everything of Marx, of Hegel, and so on, and developed a whole new strategic and theoretical approach to the world. And the seizure of power by the Bolsheviks in October 1917 is very much based upon the works that came out of that framework. And a whole series of works he wrote during the war years. pamphlets such as Socialism and War, The Socialist Revolution and the Right of Nations to Self-Determination, Imperialism and the Higher Stage of Capitalism, State and Revolution, and so on. And it was only on the basis of these theoretical studies that Lenin was able to reorient the Bolsheviks so that they were capable of going forward after the February Revolution and cohering and leading the working class to power. And they, in turn, this theoretical approach and re-evaluation during the First World War laid the basis for the politics and orientation after the War of the Communist International. But how did then Lenin develop his theories of revolutionary organisation? Lenin himself was typical of a whole generation of revolutionaries in Russia. He was the son of a respectable Tsarist official, and he was won to Marxism in his early 20s, after a period of quite intense theoretical study while living in the relative rural backwater of Samara. Previously, Lenin had been strongly influenced by the dominant populist Narodnik tradition in Russia. And this break from Narodnism, this break from populist ideas, was not an easy task for Lenin. His own elder brother had been a populist who was executed for involvement in a plan to assassinate the Tsar. And he was hanged in 1887. And that meant that for Lenin, to clarify his ideas to move to Marxism, took intense amount of theoretical work and absorption. He read virtually everything that was published at the time of the works of Marx and Engels. In 1888, at the age of 18, he read the first volume of Marx's Capital, and he then went on to translate the Communist Manifesto into Russian. And Lenin was deeply then versed in the works of Marx and Engels. You know, Trotsky argued that Lenin was in many ways their greatest student. And as August Nimps recently argued in an article, this is a partial correction to some of the way that the argument is presented by Lars Lee in his book on Lenin Rediscovered, What Is to Be Done in Context. Now, Lars Lee's book, which I very much strongly encourage everybody here to buy and read who's interested in the question, you know, is a great work of historical scholarship, which rescues what is to be done from an incredible welter of denunciation, of misinterpretation, obfuscation imposed by the bourgeois establishment. And it's very important to understanding Lenin's political approach. And in meticulous detail, Lars Lee, you know, demolishes all the arguments about Lenin and what is to be done in particular, being an authoritarian, Jacobin document, and so on. And Lars Lee shows that Lenin, the idea that Lenin was somebody, you know, that was, you know, heavily influenced throughout his life, that he didn't break from the Jacobin populist tradition, is a load of nonsense. He demonstrates that Lenin was heavily and strongly influenced and rooted in the Western European Marxist tradition. However, as Nimps points out, in highlighting the influence of the German Social Democratic Party on Lenin, and above all the work of Karl Kautsky, Lars Lee, I think, inadvertently plays down the extent to which Lenin himself was directly influenced by the works of Marx and Engels, and not by some, you know, reading of their work or understanding of their ideas mediated through the writings of Karl Kautsky, the so-called Pope of Marxism, and that. So, for example, in the years leading up to the writing of What Is to Be Done, in 1902, Lenin quoted Marx and Engels much more commonly, more frequently than Kautsky. And it should be noted as a footnote that Marx and Engels themselves had a very low opinion of Kautsky. Not that Lenin was to know this, of course, at the time. You know, Marx, for example, in a private letter, wrote of Kautsky, described him as, quote, a mediocrity, narrow in outlook, by nature a member of the Philistine tribe. That was the insight of what was to happen 30 years later. Now, there's no disputing the fact, and Lars is clear about and right about this, that Lenin was, in terms of how to build a party in Russia, was heavily influenced by the orientation, the success of German social democracy, the German Social Democratic Party, the SPD. He looked very much to that for inspiration in Russia. However, I think Nimitz is useful in pointing out that Lenin was not quite as uncritical of the German Social Democratic Party as is commonly made out. Lenin was well aware of the deleterious influence that Bernstein, the revisionist current, was having inside the German Social Democratic Party. As early as 1907, at the 1907 Congress of the Second International, Lenin was highly critical of the German Social Democrats for their stance on the colonial question, which represented something of a capitulation to imperialist sentiment. And I think that this made it somewhat easier, though Lenin, of course, was shocked by the absolute betrayal of social democracy at the outbreak of war, but still this early understanding made it somewhat easy for Lenin to sharply break with them in 1914. However, to backtrack a bit, in order to decisively break with his own roots in the populist tradition, Lenin in the 1890s conducted a very lengthy program of theoretical research and analysis of the development of capitalism in Russia, which, was, as I said, was spelled out in the book of the same title. And this research provided the basis for the program of the Russian Marxist movement. Lenin concluded from his research, I think, five main points from it. Firstly, that Russia was well down the path of capitalist development, and consequently that the populist idea that a social society could be built on the basis of the village communes that existed in Russia, he concluded this was an utterly utopian approach. Secondly, he concluded that the Russian bourgeoisie and the middle-class liberals in Russia had come onto the stage of history too late to play the same revolutionary role that the same social forces had played in the Great French Revolution. You know, that these people would not lead the fight against feudal absolutism and that. They feared the emergent working class too much. Thirdly, he concluded from this that the working class had to lead the struggle against Tsarism, and the working class needed to maintain its independence from the liberals, and instead that they should seek allies, but their allies should be the rural poor. Fourthly, however, because he concluded at this stage that because of the relative backwardness of the Russian economy, the early stages of its move towards capitalism, that socialism was not on the immediate agenda in Russia. Workers then in Russia would have to lead the fight to establish political democracy, to overthrow the Tsarism, usher in a new democratic order, and lay then the basis for the development of the labour movement and an eventual struggle for socialism. Finally, he concluded that Marxists needed to build a party that could cohere the working class and lead it in the struggle for these objectives. Now, having worked out these ideas, Lenin began to first put them into practice on a serious basis after he moved to Petrograd in August 1893. And he joined a Marxist circle largely made up of students from the Technological Institute. There was no socialist party for him to join at this stage. The Marxist movement consisted of loosely organised study groups made up predominantly of students or of intellectuals, which at best had tenuous connections with other circles in the same city and, indirectly and again very tenuously with the exiled Russian Marxists organised in the Emancipation of Labour Group
headed by Plekhanov and Axelrod, which was based in Switzerland. There was no point at this stage, you know, beating yourself up about the fact that the movement was so weak. The reality was, given the existing state of the labour movement and the fact that still populism was a very strong current amongst the Russian intelligentsia, that Marxists, you know, could only lay down the basis for the future activity by these sorts of discussion circles. But within a very short space of time, this was to change, or at least begin to change, with an upsurge of the working class movement, really beginning to form in some ways the working class movement in the course of the mid-1890s. Prior to this, Lenin had established himself as one of the leading theoreticians, if not the leading theoretician, of the study circles in Petrograd. And along with other student and intellectual activists, you know, he then, in the study circles, they tried to involve workers in these circles. But in response to the rising level of struggle, and inspired by the pamphlet by Kremer and Martov, a pamphlet called On Agitation, Lenin and other Marxists in the mid-1890s made a sharp turn towards agitation amongst workers. And Lenin, then, in the mid-1890s, began to emphasise the importance of the fact that it was the class struggle itself which would be central to changing the ideas of the mass of workers. That the mass of workers were not going to be won to socialism by the quite high-level propaganda of the discussion circles. He also attempted to draw out something of a theory about the stages of development of working-class consciousness, that the mass of workers would not be converted to socialism in one fell swoop. Now, this sharp turn away from fairly high-level propagandist work represented, you know, an important step forward for the movement, a maturing of the movement, and it was a necessary and positive step. But it in turn had its own overheads. Following the arrest of most of the more established Marxists, including Lenin himself and their exile to Siberia and so on, actually a new, younger generation of intellectual activists began to dominate the Marxist movement. People that had cut their teeth in agitational activity. And this in turn laid the basis for the development of what became to be described as the economist trend. The economists argued that the working class should concentrate on basic trade union economic demands. Fairly low-level demands about, you know, improvement in wages, conditions at work, and so on, and that they should leave political questions, and political questions really meant the overthrow of the Tsarist regime and so on, to the intellectuals and their allies, the bourgeois liberals. You know, in this context then, the scene was set for a significant shift towards reformist politics. And it was no accident then that this economist trend began to be influenced and link up in some ways with the reformist revisionist trend, tendency in the German Social Democratic Party headed by Bernstein. And Lenin was then in exile in the late 1890s, begin to wage a whole polemical battle against this emerging trend. You know, some of his sharpest writings, including What Is to Be Done, was to be issued against the economists. Now, this debate was essentially about what role the working class would play in the coming Russian Revolution, about the leading role of the working class. And it was not the supposedly elitist and authoritarian Lenin who wanted to deny the leading role of the working class. No. It was his political opponents, the economists, you know, the, if you like, the, you know, semi-reformist current in Russia that wanted to downplay the role of the working class and argued that the political leadership of the movement, or the movement against the Tsar and that for democratic rights, should be left in the hands of the middle-class liberals. Now, the problem for Lenin and for others, Marxists who are polemicising against, arguing against this economist trend, was that they, like all sorts of opportunists, you know, throughout history and up until today, were not prepared to openly argue for and their ideas and put forward a clear political program. They attempted to cover up their real program behind an emphasis on narrow political activity, narrow practical activity. The economists were a trend that were quite eclectic and scornful of theory. Despite, all the leading spokespeople of the economists, of course, being middle-class intellectuals themselves and students themselves, actually, their rhetoric was workerist, downplayed the role of theory. And this was very much used to cloud the political issues and give themselves a left cover. And it's important to stress that this was, nothing new. The economist's response to the attacks by Lenin and so on was that Lenin was dogmatic, sectarian, et cetera, et cetera. And in that sense, nothing ever changes in politics. And to the extent that the economist did resort to theoretical argument, it was to cloud the issues. Now, one of the central arguments in Lenin's booklet, What Is to Be Done, against the economists, had to do precisely then to do with the question on the role of theory and theoretical struggle. And thus his attacks of the economists for their worshipping of the existing state of the working class movement and their bowing down before political backwardness. Lenin argued if the socialist movement was to be built on a sound foundation, it first had to be clear on its own ideas. And from that, you can see the central idea, which Lenin, part of his most famous statements then, of without revolutionary theory, there can be no revolutionary movement. And furthermore, he argued that if the socialist movement was to confine itself to narrow practical activity, the day-to-day struggle for reforms in the workplace or minor political reforms, it would inevitably go astray. Its vision would be too narrow and would tend to accommodate to opportunism. And from this central emphasis on theory, ideas and politics, Lenin then began to establish a conception of the Revolutionary Party as the advanced minority of the working class that fights to win the majority to its ideas. It was to be, in his words, from What Is to Be Done, the Tribune of the People. Working-class communists, Lenin stressed, were not just to fight the good fight for basic reforms in the workplace. They were just to fight around economic issues, but also to take up all questions of democratic rights, all political questions. They had to fight every form of oppression. The Marxist ideal, he wrote, should not be the trade union secretary, but the tribune of the people, who is able to react to every manifestation of tyranny and oppression, no matter where it appears, no matter what stratum or class of the people it affects, who is able to generalise all these manifestations and clarify for all and everyone the world historical significance of the struggle for the emancipation of the proletariat. Now, on the other hand, Lenin in no sense derided the importance of the mass working class movement, which was really in the years from the mid-1890s onwards through the turn of the century and so on, was really creating a mark on Russian society. But he insisted that the role of the Marxists was not to just worship the existing level of struggle, no matter how inspiring it was, but to go beyond that. To, as he put it in What Is to Be Done, that the mass movement is the most important phenomena is a fact, not to be disputed. But the crux of the matter is how is one to understand the statement that the mass working class movement will determine the tasks. Either it means reducing the role of social democracy to mere subservience to the working class movement as such, the economist's position, or it means that the mass movement places before us new theoretical, political and organisational tasks far more complicated than those that might have satisfied us in the period before the rise of the mass movement. In other words, The key task of revolutionary leadership is to generalise the lessons of the mass struggle and offer a concrete political road forward for the working class movement. The job of the Marxists is not just to offer ready-made solutions or schemes in advance, but to apply their theory to the challenges of the world today. And one of the great strengths of what is to be done, amongst others, is that it breaks with the economic fatalist trend in the socialist movement that saw socialist consciousness developing inevitably out of the economic antagonism between capitalists and workers. But this meant, contrary to the way it's often presented, that far from being an elitist document, actually what is to be done is a profoundly liberating one, because it puts a central emphasis on conscious self-activity. That to change the world, you actually had to understand what you were doing. It wasn't just blind forces that brought it about. It is also very important to stress that what is to be done is very much a political document, not some sort of organisational panacea. It's a polemical argument against economism, not a blueprint of, you know, how you exactly set up branch meetings or whatever. Indeed, Lenin's proposals in What Is to Be Done, there's nothing particularly detailed about them. You know, the only really major organisational proposal, if you like, was to establish a national revolutionary paper. And even this very much flowed from his theoretical analysis of where things were at. And this then is the essence of Lenin's whole approach to building revolutionary party. Lenin's attacks on the economists for their organisational looseness. They posed, for example, setting up a centralised party in favour of loose, decentralised local groups operating on an autonomous basis was linked directly in his mind to their politics. In other words, if you stand for loose, fuzzy, inconsistent ideas, then logically you want a loose, fuzzy, ill-organised, undisciplined organisation. Now, it's not always the case, but, you know, some anarchists have tightly disciplined organisations. But, you know, it's fairly standard. Alternatively, clear, consistent politics demands a coherent, democratically organised and disciplined organisation. Now, Lenin's ideas of how to build an organisation, his conceptions and programme for the party then didn't in any sense emerge fully formed. They arose very much out of the specific challenges facing the Marxist movement in Russia. Thus he concedes in What Is to Be Done that in the initial stages of the movement, a certain looseness and primitiveness in organisation was not just inevitable, but even legitimate. But with the rising level of struggle, the development of the working class movement and the growing number of socialists, from the mid-1890s onwards, that actually this primitive organisation, which was couldn't be got around in the early stages of the movement, was becoming key to holding back future developments. It was becoming a serious obstacle. And it's precisely because Lenin sees the rapidly emerging revolutionary developments in society that he so insistently insists that there needs to be a coherent party built. Otherwise, the opportunity was going to be missed. This was in no sense to downplay, as I said, the importance of the mass movement. It's precisely the strength of the mass movement that led Lenin to argue that give us an organisation of revolutionaries and we will overturn Russia. It wasn't, as it's normally presented, oh, well, this represents, shows how elitist Lenin was. He just wanted a small band of conspirators and they'd overthrow it, the Tsarist regime. No, precisely because the working class struggle was advancing, there were revolutionary possibilities emerging. Actually, without a coherent revolutionary organisation, revolutionary party emerging, actually, that mass movement would be broken up, would come to nothing. Okay, with the outbreak of the revolution in 1905, Lenin took this analysis further. And I can't go into any great detail about it. But then, of course, famously, he argues for opening up of the party to recruit tens of thousands of newly radicalizing workers. But the 1905 revolution was defeated, and there followed a period of black reaction. And from a mass party with an overwhelmingly working class membership, the Bolsheviks were reduced to, in an organized sense, a few hundreds of people. You know, in some senses, you know, the whole thing had been set back. You know, they're almost a sect again. But these years of reaction also were very important for the development of Lenin's ideas and instilling the organization for the future. They're an important test for the Bolsheviks. Because in order to survive as a healthy revolutionary current, Lenin and the other Bolsheviks had to raise a whole series of important political battles. On his left flank, Lenin had to argue against those former leading Bolsheviks who adopted, in the wake of the defeats of 1905, an ultra-left sectarian direction that threatened to totally destroy the organization. On his right, Lenin had to combat the increasingly reformist Mensheviks who wanted to liquidate the illegal underground organization, and also combat the conciliators in the ranks of the Bolshevik Party who were making concessions to the Mensheviks. And one of the key lessons that Lenin learned from this period was that it was necessary to carry through the political struggle around these ideas to its organizational conclusion. It was not sufficient to argue against the ideas of the reformists and other opportunist currents while remaining in the same party with them. There was needed to be a clear and decisive break, both organisationally and politically. And then, in 1912, then, the Bolsheviks formed their own separate party from the Mensheviks. And by 1913, with the revival of the working class struggle, actually the Bolsheviks would become, I would argue, the first mass working class party, which was purely revolutionary. Now, without the clear break, both with the Mensheviks on the right and the ultra-lefts, the Bolsheviks would not have been able to build a party that could lead the Russian working class to victory in October 1917. However, there were still quite important limitations to Lenin's theoretical outlook prior to World War I. Lenin had not generalised his break with opportunist currents, reformists if you like, though the term's a bit loose, inside Russia itself. He did not generalise that to a break with opportunist currents, reformist currents internationally in the Second International. He still remained committed to the Second International. And it was only with the betrayal of the International on the outbreak of war that Lenin was forced to generalise his approach. And after August 1914, the shock of what happened led Lenin again to a whole period of intense re-evaluation of his ideas, theoretical study and research, in which he carries out a thorough reappraisal of Marxism. He made serious study of Hegel, of imperialism, and the Marxist attitude to the state. And on the basis of this rethinking, he came to the conclusion that the reformers internationally had to be seen as agents of the bourgeoisie within the working class movement. And with this new understanding also came an understanding of his revaluation that Russia was just one centre of the battle of the working class within a whole world imperialist system. And his understanding of imperialism then, and how increasingly the world capitalist system was integrated and so on, led him to the conclusion that the whole program then for in Russia had to be revised. He recognised that capitalism had matured as a world system, indeed it overmatured, and that the system as a whole was ripe for socialism. And that the savagery and brutality unleashed for the war in Europe meant that the choice was increasingly between socialism and barbarism. So while Lenin still recognised that in a backward economy like Russia itself, it was impossible for workers having overthrown the regime to immediately go forward to build socialism, actually he saw now that Russia had to be seen as I said, one battlefield on that world front, that if workers were to successfully stage a revolution in Russia, then if that acted an inspiration for workers in Western Europe and so on, that was possible to move forward to socialism in Russia on the basis of combining those two revolutions. That the resources of Western European capitalism linked to a successful workers' revolution in Russia actually meant that Russia didn't have to go through a new stage of capitalist development before socialism was impossible. So the basic program that he'd held to since the 1890s was substantially revived. Moreover, he saw that Russia was one of the key weak links in the capitalist chains. One of the places where the working class could first break through, and that in turn, that the Russian working class could play a leading role if it took power in inspiring working class struggle all around the world. And it was on the basis of these ideas that when he returned to Russia after the revolution in February 1917, he was able, documents such as his April thesis and so on, and the struggle he conducted inside the Bolshevik Party to rearm the party. You know, the mass of other leaders in the party, and that still adhered to the old program. In the context of the times, of the whole change of imperialism and so on, that old program, which, you know, seemed revolutionary, seemed the way forward, was actually going to be, if it was the program the Bolsheviks continued to adhere to, it was going to lead to disaster. It was going to lead to accommodation to the new regime in Russia, the provisional government. Well, the accommodation was already happening. And so that meant that there had to be a thorough reorientation of the party that Lenin led, in many ways single-handedly, from the leadership, to reorient the party. You know, he had the advantage, of course, of his own prestige in the party, but also from the fact that a whole section of the working class membership of the party, while not having a clear theoretical perspective, was wanting to go beyond the old approach of, well, you know, there's two stages. You know, we've overthrown the Tsar, now we've got to limit ourselves to, you know, winning what we can in the framework of capitalism. There was an upsurge of development from below with the Soviets emerging and so on. That meant there was fertile soil for Lenin to reorient the party. And it was on the basis then of this theoretical reorientation that laid the basis for the victory in October. So the Bolsheviks didn't seize power because, you know, Lenin was this clever, furtive tactician that came up with all these, you know, opportunistic schemes. No, it was on the basis of very clear programmatic outlook based upon a scientific analysis of Russian capitalism, how that's fitted into world capital system. It was only on that basis that you could establish a party that could actually lead the working class to power. And I think that's very important because to combat the whole idea that, you know, Lenin was this master tactician, you know, a Machiavellian, you know, who just conned, conned workers into taking power as though you can trick people to taking power into their own hands. No, the whole program of Lenin, and we have to see the whole program of a socialist revolution, it has to be a conscious political act. You can't overthrow capitalism by accident, by mistake. You know, there are not unconscious Marxists and that can lead revolution. No. The liberatory project demands a high level of consciousness. And actually, you know, in the world today, that is even more the case. You know, to overthrow modern capitalist society, we need to have a party, but not just that, a whole layer of the working class, very clear conception of what it wants to do and what it wants to achieve. And that very much is the embodiment of what Lenin has handed down to us. And I'll leave us there.